Welcome back to another episode of Marvel News Desk, your best place to keep up with all the latest news, reviews, and speculation concerning the Marvel world of film and TV. I'm your host, Caleb, and I've got Adam with us today. Unfortunately, Rhiannon is out traveling the world, but she was good enough to send us some thoughts on Endgame before she left, so that will be cut in here at some point. But nonetheless, today, Endgame has finally come out, and so we're just going to talk Endgame for a really long time, I think. Before we do that, though, let's go ahead. We did want to do one or two news things. I guess the first news thing we can talk about is money. So, Adam, you've been following box office pretty significantly. It's safe to say that they're going to make a good profit, I guess, on Endgame?
So it is safe to say, you know, I was kind of talking crap the last time we were on here, and even a little bit before that Lion King was going to put up Endgame numbers. But it's safe to say that Lion King is definitely not going to put up Endgame numbers. Yeah, this is crazy, man. We probably won't ever see this again. You know, even, I mean, you have Star Wars Episode 9 coming out later this week. But, I mean, Endgame didn't just break Infinity War's opening weekend records, right? It completely annihilated it. It completely, you know, shattered it. It's insane. What was, I think Disney officially said 350 domestic, right?
Yeah, but I saw industry people are saying maybe 354.
Well, yeah, I would say, domestic. Yeah, Deadline reported 358.8. So we're talking a full 100 million domestically, and we're talking like 500 million, you know, internationally, worldwide. It's insane. 1.2 billion worldwide. It's crazy. I never thought it would go this far. I know we did have an office pool going, I'm guessing opening weekends, and it far surpassed what any single person ever would have guessed.
Yeah, it's I know people don't like the Marvel DC flame wars, but I'm petty. And so my first thought was the best DCEU movie was Aquaman, like just a little over a billion. And I mean, Marvel had a better 3 days than DC's ever had an entire movie. It's just another way to put that data. Like, it's just 1.2 billion is so much money. And I think it's legitimately that Avatar 2.7.
Oh, for sure.
I think it's got a shot. I mean, what we won't see, we're in totally unknown territory. So nobody can tell you they have a guess what next weekend's going to be, because we don't know. Like, is it possible that with an event this big, they exhaust some of the demand and you have a bigger drop off next week? Maybe. But we won't know until we find out. But I think it's put itself to where all it's got to do is have basically a 2.5x multiplier,
right?
In order to, it doesn't even have to have that. It has to have like a 2.2% multiplier to get there. So
right, exactly. You know, and that's the thing. I mean, it has to have worse legs than Infinity War to not even have a shot at Avatar. If it comes in exactly how Avatar did, it already has 2.8. So that's the thing, man. If it performs even the slightest bit better than Infinity War, we're talking a $3 billion movie. You know, that's actually realistic after this weekend, which is just insane to think about.
So it's, it's obviously doing super well. I don't know, how much do you think fans care about this? I mean, I think people love the wow stuff. I know Hollywood obsesses over it because it's, you know, people's livelihoods and people's fortunes. Do you think, like, the average fan cares, though? They just want to see a good movie. I sometimes think that we care about this stuff more than other people do. But.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's huge. It's huge with the trades. And like you said, I mean, and that's what's so crazy to think about. Marvel Studios needed 1.1, I think, was the final number, to break even. So literally every single penny they make from, you know, tonight onward is total profit. So, I mean, it's likely going to be... you know, Walt Disney's most profitable movie ever. Yeah, I guess I probably should have looked at exact numbers. But Infinity War, you know, as revolutionary and big as Infinity War did, that didn't become profitable until 10 days in, which was still a rare occasion then. You know, literally a movie can't become more profitable quicker unless it's some Indiegogo budgeted film, you know, with like $1,000 budget or something. But, you know, on a blockbuster scale, it's just insane numbers, unprecedented numbers. And even though Star Wars Episode 9, you know, that's probably the biggest competition it might ever have, at least in the next decade, you know. It's hard to believe that it'll actually have any legitimate competition every time, you know, soon. Unless, you know, Avatar's whole deal is 3D, unless there's a new medium that comes out, like a virtual reality theater type thing. But, you know, that's not going to happen in the next decade or so. Yeah, it's just crazy numbers. I don't think Bob Iger or Kevin Feige or Victoria Alonso or Louis D. Esposito are probably worried about losing their jobs anytime soon. I mean, it's hard to can someone who makes $1.2 billion in a weekend.
Well, and it's the return on investment's incredible because Marvel, they only paid $4 billion for Marvel in the first place. Now, we are talking box office numbers. So, you know, like the $1.2 billion, Disney actually is only bringing home, I think, like $400 or $500 million of that money. The rest is going to theater chains and other people and all that kind of stuff. But still, it's a lot of money. It's easily, you know, the return on investment has been great. And as we mentioned a week or two ago, this doesn't factor at all the toys and all the t-shirts and all that stuff they've sold. Plus, like we said, what, $200, $250 million of corporate tie-ins from Audi and all those other companies. Like, it's just, you know, that's all money that was there before this even started. So,
right.
That's pretty fabulous.
The number that surprised me is they only spent $150 million for publicity and advertising worldwide. They make that, like, on the hour. You know, so that's absolutely crazy to think about. And you brought a good thing with consumer products. There's so many moments in this movie. I mean, Funko, you know, next week's going to roll out some huge thing. Like, exactly what they did with Captain Marvel and the Flurkin and all the stuff that comes out afterwards, you know, and all the Infinity War toys that came out after the release of the movie. There will be several probably decent-selling toys coming out in the coming weeks and months.
The other bit of news that we kind of skipped over because we were going into hermit mode for spoilers was Tessa Thompson was interviewed and asked about the future of Thor. And she kind of let slip that Taika Waititi has apparently worked on a pitch for a fourth Thor movie. And that apparently the conversations are starting to come together. We have not said it yet, but this will be a spoiler-filled episode, so don't... If you haven't seen Endgame, stop listening now, because I don't think we can talk about this story well without talking about something that happens in Endgame. So definitely go away, turn it off if you've not seen the movie yet. But we see at the end of Endgame, you know, Valkyrie kind of takes over as the, you know, the regent, I guess, of New Asgard, which is like somewhere in Norway or something. So, I mean, I don't know. Are you excited, Adam, about a fourth Thor movie? And particularly, does it need to have Thor Odinson? Or are you cool just with a Valkyrie movie kind of taking that space?
So, yeah. Well, first and foremost, yes, I'm very excited. I mean, Tessa can certainly hold her own movie. You know, she can hold her own franchise. This movie opened up so many new story arcs and potential things, you know, now that we know New Asgard's, you know, on Earth. Obviously, I mean, is Thor 4 going to be, you know, like a Siege type deal? What was it? Siege and Dark Reign, I think. Or what the deal is. But yeah, I mean, it makes sense. It's hard to believe Taika would do a storyline like that. But then again, Thor Ragnarok was about the end of the world. And Taika still handled that. I'm down for it. You know, obviously it's going to probably make money. And it's going to look dope. And it's going to have awesome toys. But yeah, and that's the one thing, you know, at this point, I probably won't have the same reception about Cap 4 or Iron Man 4, you know, but Thor 4 is in such a unique situation. Obviously, are they going to not necessarily make Valkyrie the new Thor, but, you know, with Thor Ragnarok being a complete refreshment of the character, you know, I don't think we have to worry about fatigue yet. Certainly not Thor's new iteration. I mean, if they did a fat Thor movie, I'm totally in.
Tessa Thompson is definitely a good way to go forward in the future. I think they want to continue to have strong female roles. I think it was real obvious, you know, we'll talk about it later, but some of the scenes in this that Marvel wants their future to be female. And so it's, it would not surprise me at all for Tessa to take over. All right, at this point, we will. I'm probably going to insert Rhiannon right now. She sent us, 15 minutes, I think, of her thoughts about Endgame. I'll put those first. Adam and I haven't heard those, so if what you hear from us sounds redundant, there's a reason for that. But we'll put Rhiannon's thoughts in here, and then you'll have me and Adam on the other side talking about Endgame.
Hey, everybody. This is Rhiannon. Sorry I couldn't be around for this week's podcast. We just couldn't work out the times for Adam, Caleb, and I to all be online at the same time when we have all seen Endgame. So, I mean, I think there's all the big things. I think the number one thing that we should recognize is that Caleb nailed so many things that, like, he wanted to see or that he expected to see, and we totally got him. I'm kind of retroactively really happy that we put lots of warnings that we didn't, like, have inside information, that our spoilers were just speculation, because, man, did we get some stuff right. But the one thing we never, ever could have expected or gotten right was Korg in a pineapple romper. That's what, here, in the first minute of my response to Endgame, I could barely get out of the theater. I was, like, banging on the person next to me, like, oh my god, it's the purple romper! Which, like, two of you probably have the faintest clue what I'm talking about, but Taika Waititi wore this pineapple romper to San Diego Comic-Con before Ragnarok came out, and it's hideous and lovely and fabulous, and the fact that Korg was wearing it, I could not stop laughing. The crowd was way more into it than they were Captain Marvel. There was so much more, you know, everybody there was excited about it. I'm recording this about 24 hours after seeing Endgame, and as I think about it, I feel like I was rushed through really emotional stuff. You have some places to be. I mean, it's kind of like college graduation and you don't have time to go to the after party. Like, you're having to say goodbye to all your friends or something, but you have to get on a plane that evening because you're, like, going somewhere. I don't know. My college graduation, I wasn't rushing anywhere. I don't know. When you have something that's supposed to be a moment that you just sit in it and stay with it, I felt like they had to jump to so many new plot points. The 24 hours later feeling that I'm having is that I forgot that Black Widow died. I think the moment that, you know, you realize that she and Clint are going after the Soul Stone. I mean, obviously, you know, one of the two of them's gonna die. And so, like, it wasn't, you know, like, a huge surprise that one of them died. It was a fun little fight. The fight to the death, I guess. But there was something about the emotional impact of that that, like, and then we have to jump to, you know, this part. It just sort of felt, I don't know. I forgot that Black Widow died. Like, there was a point at Tony's funeral that they were talking about her, or, you know, like, the memory of her, or she would have wanted the, I don't even remember what they were saying, but I seriously was like, who are they talking about? What are they talking about? Like, what did I miss here? So, I mean, but that's, like, dude. I in no way disliked the movie. I don't let those 2 minutes of me having other thoughts disregard, like, yeah, do not send me hate mail that I didn't like this movie. Thor was hilarious. I laughed so much in this movie, not just Thor, like, everything. Like, I did not realize how light and fluffy this movie would be. I don't know. I expected it to be a post-apocalypse story, you guys. I expected it to be, you know, sad and gloomy and really high stakes. Like, it didn't feel... I think that maybe that's why the deaths sort of didn't... Yeah, they didn't really hit emotionally in just the right place for me, is because, like, I don't know. It felt like I watched a really good comedy, and then it became very intense, and... It also ended on high notes, so I didn't, or I mean, I felt like it kind of ended on high notes, so it didn't feel so much like the high stakes were there and that there was so much a life and death situation. This is a situation that they went into, like, confident that they had to win. Not necessarily confident that they would win, but knowing that they had to win, that they had to come out of this. So it was just a weird place for me. But anyways, it was hilarious. I can't wait to watch it again. This is a movie that it just felt like at the end credits, you could just watch it again and watch it again and watch it again. And people will, and it's going to make all the money. Oh my God, all the money. Captain America can wield Mjolnir. You know, I had seen plenty of speculation that in Ultron, when they were all trying to pick up Mjolnir, that it actually moved when Steve attempted, and that he was probably faking it, that he was probably able to wield Mjolnir and just didn't want to make everybody else feel bad. But him and Thor just tag teaming on Thanos was amazing. Getting to see Thanos die twice was amazing. And the prospect of Thor being in Guardians 3 has me totally psyched. Just hitting on the high points here, when Captain America went into that bleepity bleep elevator, oh my God. I was sitting next to our longtime listener, commenter, like good friend, Michael T. Ford. And a friend that obviously wasn't as excited as us. And I just started, like, jumping up and down when he got on that elevator, going, oh my God, oh my God. And my friend that's not Michael was like, what is it? Like, what is it? And I was like, he's in the elevator! I really thought we were getting another elevator fight. That was pretty smart. Shout out to the comics there with a little Hail Hydra. Getting what you need, getting out of there, and then getting your ass kicked by yourself. All the third wall breaking. Captain America's ass. Oh my God. I cannot wait until everybody is publicly talking about America's ass. I felt like there was almost as much third wall breaking in this movie as a Deadpool movie. They knew what the fans wanted, and they were just giving it, which I'm sure eventually, like weeks down the road, we can talk about, was it too much fan service? Did they give us too much? Was it, you know, too campy, too whatever? But I mean, the thing about fan service is it makes fans happy. Long live Cap's ass. Did not realize Captain America ages, but maybe I did. I was a little caught up on that. But, I mean, you know, all the timey-wimey, travel-y stuff, evidently Ned doesn't age either. So, Cap ages, Ned doesn't. It's a mixed-up, flipped-up world that we live in. I totally knew Carol was going to show up in the fight. Like, when they came through, you know, when Strange brought everybody through all the portals, and he was like, who else do you need? I was like, Carol. I was, like, shouting at the screen, actually. Sorry, few hundred other people that were there. But I was like, Carol! You need Carol! And Carol showed up with her haircut. So excited about Valkyrie. Love what she's turned into. I don't know where she got her horse, but I guess she was keeping that over in New Asgard. Had no issues with peeing. I don't know if anybody else. I've restrained, like, making any comments about the movie at all, but when I see people planning not to pee, I just want to tell them, yes, you're going to pee yourself from laughing. Because this movie is hilarious. Obviously, touched on a bunch of stuff. I'm sure Caleb will be talking about the stuff that he had asked for that showed up. I was excited to go back to that first Avengers movie. And, you know, I mean, them looking in on themselves at other points. It was a nice little homage to the past 10 years. And they mention it. I don't know if they mention, gosh, I don't remember the second place. But, you know, the past 10 years and the past 80 years of comics. So, you know, they sort of acknowledged that they were shouting out to the comics as well. Yeah, I'm sure we will talk about this a lot going into, you know, the future. Overall, that was just a joy to watch. It was just absolutely pleasant to see it all come together like that. I'm happy with the ending. You know, we knew people were going to die, and I feel like they didn't, you know, they didn't milk it too much. It was appropriate for Tony. It'll be interesting to see where everything goes from here. So, the one thing about going to super duper, super early showings is you haven't had a chance to see the rumors that there are no end credits. We were some of the few in the long run that sat through all of the credits only to be disappointed. And there were actually, you know, Marvel people there for us to utter curses at. Insult on top of injury for a 3-hour movie. But there were people that hopped and ran to the bathrooms as soon as the credits started rolling. The end credits, I mean, even just the end credits art, you know, like with the signatures and featuring the Avengers and everything, that was just really, really cool. So anyways, I enjoyed it. I'm sure we will pick it all apart. We have new Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We'll have Gluck and Dagger to talk about. All kinds of things to do. I can't wait to watch it again. And I will talk to everybody later.
All right. So it's like Infinity War last year. It's such a big movie. Like, I don't know how to like pick apart. I mean, we'll talk for weeks about this, I'm sure, on this podcast. Let me start with, was this at all the movie you expected it to be? Like, because I feel like expectations were weird with this, with as little as they gave us. How did your expectations versus reality kind of play out?
Still came in. I think it still came in over expectations. Obviously, I did have the Facebook fiasco that spoiled two of the big third act moments. But it still came in above expectations. There's so many Easter eggs in the final act, that final battle. You know, I don't think any person's going to be able to pick them all apart. Did you notice, have you seen Howard the Duck?
Is he in there?
Yeah, he's in there. So that one of those, I noticed Howard.
In the final battle?
In the final battle, yeah, when Waffs shows up, Howard the Duck is right behind, kind of, what would it, the left side of Wasp, with like a Tommy gun. It's in the blink of an eye. That's the thing. There's so much. I just caught that because I'm like, what's that white thing? And then it passed by. I'm like, oh, crap, that's Howard the Duck. So, yeah, go search. There's stuff all online about it. But there's so much stuff like that. I mean, they went all out. And I noticed, I'm pretty sure, it wasn't alphabetical. I noticed Jonathan Hickman was thanked as one of the creators. Obviously, he created the Black Order and Infinity and all that stuff. But that the whole movie was almost played out exactly like, you know, a Hickman comic does. It was just so dense and rich and comic booky, you know. And that's the thing. I think even if you went into the movie knowing who died and the major plot points and stuff, I still think it would have wowed you. Just because it was so much of a spectacle. You know, at 3 hours, there was some stuff in the first half of the movie, I think, they could have maybe trimmed a little bit. But I don't think there was much you could have cut out of that 3-hour runtime, you know?
I was really surprised. And this was a negative when I first saw it, but on a second viewing, I didn't care. There's a lot less action than I thought there would be in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've kind of been trained by Marvel to expect Act 1, major set piece. Act 2, major set piece. Act 3, major set piece. And, you know, that first bit where they went to Thanos' garden planet was really short and abbreviated. Like, there was not a whole lot to that scene, and there wasn't a whole lot of action to it. And then it got real quiet and, like, lots of conversations again. And then, and again, this is not picking on it. It's just interesting to me. A lot of those Infinity Stones did not take, like, a great fight scene to get a hold of. Like, they just clock Peter Quill with War Machine's arm, and they take that one. And, you know, the whole thing with the Tesseract is just, like, Tony talking to his dad. And even a lot of the Soul Stone stuff, like, it wasn't a huge fight. It was more about the drama of which of them's going off the cliff. And so a lot of the time travel stuff, Hulk and Ancient One was just like them having a conversation about time travel. There wasn't like a full out Hulk Ancient One fight. And I think that it was all done really well. I was just a little surprised. Like the first time I watched it, I was like, I'm 2 hours in and there's hardly been like a major fight scene. Like it's just been a lot of people talking. And I think that was surprising to me, but the second time through, I accepted it and liked it because I wasn't trying to predict what was happening. I've gotten to where I have to see Marvel movies twice because the first time is all just like anticipation and guessing what's next. And the second time I can actually like absorb it and enjoy it.
Right. That is a good point. You know, and the interesting thing is I wonder what percentage of the time, you know, that time heist was reused. You know, I mean, well, like that Chitauri shot, that was straight out of the Avengers, right? That wasn't like a new VFX shot. Then there are, I mean, obviously some Morag stuff. What else?
We were talking, do you think Natalie Portman actually did anything for this?
Or see, I don't know. Footage? That's the thing. I don't know. I can't recall the Dark World for the life of me. But that's the type of thing. And then this opened up all sorts of other things. I mean, we see the Ancient One fighting in the Battle of New York, you know, but we didn't see that in the Avengers. And so it's all sorts of that fan service thing. It's that universe stuff, you know, that, okay, well, now that we watch, if we go back and watch the Avengers, we know, well, even though we don't see her on screen, you know, the Ancient One is down on Bleecker Street helping the Avengers fight. That would surprise me most. I mean, they went ahead and spoiled the Stonekeeper type thing through Twitter emojis. But I totally forgot that there had been rumors that Tilda Swinton was in the movie. Which makes perfect sense because Mark Ruffalo spoiled that ages ago. You know, and I totally, totally forgot about it.
Did you see that he maybe spoiled Cap's ending?
Oh, he did the symbol thing or what?
No, there was one interview where he's like, yeah, they give me all these crazy scripts. I mean, like, in one of them, and he points to Chris Evans, he goes, like, you got married.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that now.
Let's talk about... So a lot of this was... People talked about... Do you think this... Was this what you wanted as far as the capstone, the completion, the finish of these 22 movies? Did they... Oh, nail the landing. That's what I'm trying to say. Do you feel like they nailed the landing in what they put together for us?
I think so. It certainly, I mean, it feels more of an ending than it does a beginning, of course. There's so much stuff that could spread out of this, you know. And timeline-wise, you know, we talked a little bit offline about it kind of creating all sorts of question marks and not red flags, but yeah, it raises all sorts of questions in terms of the timeline and stuff. But yeah, I mean, it was one hell of an ending. Obviously, the story arc to both Tony Stark and Cap are done. But I don't think they resolved Thor's story arc at all. And I certainly don't think... Well, they kind of did wrap up Banner's story arc, I guess. The other two, I would consider Hawkeye's. And then Black Widow's just kind of seemed off to me. That might be my biggest criticism of the whole movie. But yeah, I would say, you know, with the exception of Thor, mostly everyone's story arc is complete. Unless, I mean, would you consider Fat Thor being a complete story arc? It just feels unfinished to me, you know?
Yeah, so I'm interested to pick some of these apart. Let's start with Thor. I was really torn in that I really personally liked and felt a lot of resonance with the Rene Russo, Thor's mom, like, scenes and, like, trying to help Thor get back on track. But if you had told me, like, Thor's going to see one of his family members and kind of reconnect with who he is, I would have been like, oh, Loki? Oh, Odin? You know, like, his mom would never have been what I predicted. And I don't want to say I didn't like it, but I thought it was a very surprising choice to go with that. Because in the previous movies, I didn't feel like Thor and Frida was a particularly strong thing. I felt like it was interesting that they went to that place.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but I mean, I think generally what we're supposed to get out of Thor is this idea that he's had these expectations on him all along. And even, I guess what's really interesting is in Ragnarok, it felt like he was finally living into who Odin wanted him to be. But then this movie sort of peeled that off and was like, no, leading these people was never you. Like, it was never your job. And so I guess what I like about it is it does set him off into a new direction where he can just be fun, and they've just, like, peeled off all the weight of all that Asgardian Shakespearean stuff, if that makes sense.
Right, and that's the thing. That to me, almost seems as if they're trying to set up, like, almost a whole new Thor franchise. You know? I mean, it has Taika's name written all over it. Just the whole absurdity and goofiness of the character. You know, like, even like you just said, you know, Thor even said for the first time in 1,000 years, I don't have a path to be on or something like that. So yeah, I guess that would be the only arc I don't really necessarily see complete so far.
Now, you mentioned Black Widow. What were your thoughts on her and Hawkeye and Vormir? It seems like maybe there's something that was off there to you a little bit.
So to me, knowing that the Black Widow movie is coming up, it was pretty evident to me that they shoved as much in Endgame of her as they did in any previous movie. It almost seemed like it was too much. You know, I don't want to say too much Black Widow, but it was pretty clear that they're setting something else up. Right, because until then, I mean, she hasn't been involved as much. You know, what was the last time she had as many lines? Iron Man 2, maybe?
Winter Soldier. Rewatching them, I forget how much she's in that movie. Yeah.
Okay, so I mean, so we're still talking a while ago, you know. But yeah, I don't know. It just felt off. I think it took off too fast. Maybe that's what the biggest criticism I have of it is, you know, because then out of nowhere, you know, after the time jump, she's kind of the glue holding everyone together, and then she throws herself off a cliff. So I guess maybe that's just my only issue, is that it took off way too fast. But now that I'm talking about it, I'm not sure any other way they could have done it.
It's interesting. Even as we're talking, I'm building this theory that, like, it feels to me like Marcus and McFeely paired the original six into three pairs, and they purposely made their stories like an inversion of each other's. The one that to me that was obvious was the Hawkeye Black Widow story, because I mean, that's a whole story about this SHIELD agent who met this KGB agent who didn't think that she was worthwhile and she was too evil to be saved. And then what she's doing is basically doing for Clint what he had done for her all those years ago.
Right.
Giving her a second opportunity and returning back the favor that he had done her. And so, like, the way that those... I thought that was really clever, the way those two came together. That it needed to be Black Widow who died because she had to have the opportunity to give Hawkeye a second chance the way that he gave her a second chance so long ago. You know, like, to me, there was just a real poeticness to that.
I am also not, I am definitely not used to Jeremy Renner talking that much. Like, I'm like, oh man, Hawkeye's actually got lines.
Yeah, so, I mean, we'll talk about Hawkeye. I had actually said on this podcast, someone's going to claim that we did spoilers. I don't know, like four months ago, I was like, oh, they're going to start this movie. They're just going to punch us in the gut and disappear Hawkeye's family in front of our face in the first 2 minutes of Endgame. And it turns out they actually did. That's the way the whole thing started. Did you enjoy seeing what little we did of Ronan? I feel like I could have done with some more, but
I think it was adequate. You know, obviously, they never did say Ronan on screen, did they? Yeah, I don't think it was too bad. I thought his suit was pretty cool. Comic book reader in me doesn't see the advantage of cutting the eyes out of his mask up, you know, instead of just having it a full face mask. But, you know, it is what it is. I think it is adequate. I never would have thought he would be the one to, I never thought he'd be the one to go after the Soul Stone. And I mean, no one, did Nebula not warn them of what the Soul Stone was all about?
I don't think anybody knows. All they know is that Thanos and Gamora left for Vormir and that he killed her while they were there. But I don't think the explicit idea that you traded a soul for the soul, I don't think anybody but Thanos knew that.
And Steve just returns it? Like, Steve is just going to be all hunky-dory walking up to the Red Skull and giving back the Soul Stone? Like, how'd that happen?
I didn't even think about that. I was thinking, if Chris Evans ever wants to do it, this would be an incredible movie, right? Just Cap time-hopping and returning the stones. And, like, all the adventures and the issues he would have, getting them to the right place at the right time and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
I get a kick out of that.
Yeah, it'd be good. There's a lot of questions. I mean, obviously, it felt like an ending, but a lot of questions were certainly raised by this, especially when you start involving the time travel stuff.
So, I don't want to go into it too much because I think Rhiannon will be interesting to have on that conversation maybe next week. There is one thing that I feel like I'm missing, but maybe this just is weird. So the machine could take them to any time and any place, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what was the purpose in teaming up the way they did? Like, for example, why did you send Nebula and War Machine and Hawkeye and Black Widow to Morag and then make Hawkeye and Black Widow fly a spaceship to Vormir? Why don't you just send like the team of two directly to Vormir and the other team directly? Like, what advantage was there to send them together to Morag and then immediately split them up? That just seemed weird to me.
Yeah, I don't know. If it just so happens to be Morag and Vormir are like in the same solar system or something, I don't know.
But even then, you're adding risk of like the ship breaks down or somebody like catches them or that being said, if your thing is teamwork, just have Black Widow and Hawkeye stick around long enough to grab the Power Stone. And then send three of them together to Vormir instead of just the two. Like the idea of doing it was the same thing with New York a little bit. Like why you send a whole team to one place or why it even mattered that there were three stones in New York at once. Like you could have sent them to other points and it would have been easier to get. Like I would have sent for the Mind Stone. I would have sent them to Sokovia to pick up the staff from like Hydra's lair in that castle 3 minutes before Tony showed up to take the staff. You know what I'm saying? Like that seems to be an easier spot to steal it than when it was surrounded by S.H.I.E.L.D. agents and Loki and all that stuff.
Yeah. There's a lot of questions. You know, I mean, obviously look at 2012 in that timeline. Not only did Captain America not inform anyone that Hydra's about to take over S.H.I.E.L.D., he also pseudo-encouraged it. Like, what happens? He tells Rumlow, Hell Hydra. And then, I mean, Rumlow and Sitwell are going to go up to the Cap of that timeline. Like, they're all buddy-buddy, and the other Cap's going to be like, what? And they're going to end up killing him? I don't know. There's so many various variables and such. But that's the other thing. I mean, this movie was chock full of, not necessarily MacGuffins, but plot devices. You know, the only reason 2014 Thanos came back is arguably one of the most flimsy plot devices in the whole MCU. You know, you could tell, and the Russo brothers said they loved writing themselves into a corner. And as soon as, you know, the Nebula part started going wonky and stuff, I'm like, oh, so this is how they get out of the corner. You know, it's the one, it's the one thing that you're like, okay, that's kind of believable. You know, I mean, that's virtually the only thing that could have happened, I guess, you know, for Thanos to become a villain again.
I do love the idea that you've got Pym particles and you've got a genius like Tony Stark and Bruce Banner working, and they have to create this whole platform and do all this reverse engineering to travel through time. And Thanos gets one vial of Pym particles and he's like, oh, I can reverse engineer this to take an entire spaceship.
Army, yeah. Yeah, and that's one of the scenes that I'm like, man, this is straight out of a comic book. Just the whole shrunken Sanctuary 2 going through the quantum realm, then coming up from the platform. It just looks so bizarre and weird. And I'm like, man, this is a comic book movie for sure.
Yeah, and I don't want to... It may sound to listeners like we're nitpicking, like we didn't enjoy it. I loved every bit of this. I think it's a testimony to them that when we talk about these things, they don't make a lot of sense and we really don't give a flip. Like, okay, whatever. I don't care. I still liked it.
Right. So, I mean, we talked about this in Infinity War. You know, Infinity War is a movie that someone probably could have hopped into without ever seeing any MCU movie, right? You know, all the Wakanda stuff was pretty self-explanatory in the film, all the Guardian stuff pretty well. But if nobody had seen an MCU movie before Endgame, I don't think it would have made that much of sense, right? Certainly not the Thanos stuff. There's, I mean, Quill's line. You know, Quill shows up, then there's that moment between him and Gamora. Nobody, you know, would understand the meaning behind that scene. And then, you know, Black Panther coming out of the gate and all that stuff. You know, this movie was all about the fan service, and it should have been. You know, it's the ending of 21 movies, 22 movies. But I don't think it's new viewer friendly, or it's not new viewer friendly as Infinity War. But even then, it's still the best performing movie of all time.
It's interesting. So I went with my parents yesterday. They were in town, so I went with them and my daughter. And I asked my dad, because my dad's seen some of these, but he doesn't know. You know, he doesn't remember any of them. He doesn't remember what's what. And I was like, does this make sense? And he was like, oh, no, it made some sense. Like, he's like, the storyline was easy enough to fall. He's like, there's times where people show up, and I'm like, I probably am supposed to know who that is, but I don't. But, like, even, like, that Quill scene with Gamora, I think he's smart. I think he was able to figure out, like, oh, they must have been a couple, but that's not the same version because that's the version from the past. So that's why she kicked him. You know, like, I think he was able to pick that up. What I did notice, so we saw it Thursday night, first screening possible, big fan screening, lots of cheering and whooping and hollering and all that stuff. And then Saturday, it was just a little quieter, more like families and I think casual fans. And I think there's little things that people don't get as much. To me, this movie was fine for new people, but it was incredible if you like them.
Right, right.
So on the Thursday showing, when Cap walked into the elevator, the second the elevator doors opened, there were just dozens of people going, no way, yes, woo! Like, you know, just like screaming and like just so pumped up about the elevator. And when I watched it Saturday, like it was just silent. Like the elevator door opened and he walked in and nobody said anything. And you could tell that was the difference between an audience for whom that was visually like cueing them off to Winter Soldier, and the audience Saturday didn't know the difference, you know.
Right. What about even bigger moments like the Cap Mjolnir thing? Were there any pops Saturday?
Yeah, there was some stuff. That's the one I was embarrassed by. Thursday night, when that hammer started shaking, I made a weird noise, man. I just, in the middle of it, I was just like, oh, like I was just so excited. And you knew it was coming as it goes through the air. You're like, oh, this is going to hit his hand. Oh, it's so good. All right, so we've talked about Black Widow. We talked about Hawkeye. We talked Hulk. I was a little surprised that they didn't show us any of that transformation. Like, he just shows up fully formed as Professor Hulk. I thought that was fine. I thought they probably could have got something good out of showing that process. But what did you think about that decision to just do it and off screen?
That's another one of the thing. I mean, that's another one of the things, you know, you won't get entirely if you haven't seen, you know, Avengers, and if you haven't seen Ragnarok. Yeah, I don't mind that it happened off screen. I mean, we've known it's coming for the longest time, you know, so it kind of lost that oomph. But I didn't mind it necessarily. I love how sophisticated visual effects have gone, because Hulk hasn't really, really super looked like Mark Ruffalo until this movie. I mean, this movie looked like they put Gamora makeup on Mark Ruffalo, right? It was crazy how great Hulk looked. I still can't get over the voice. I don't know. That kind of part didn't really match up to me. It was just bizarre. I think it was just weird because it's Professor Hulk. But yeah, it was super cool.
That brings us around to the two that we have to talk about. I mean, kind of the core of all this stuff. Were you surprised that we got... I mean, I think all of us were, based on our predictions. Iron Man dying and Cap staying alive, I think, was the flip of what a lot of us thought, a lot of people thought. Do you feel like Iron Man got the death he deserved in this?
Coincidentally enough, like Thanos said, I think it was inevitable. You know, that's kind of Tony's character. You know, he keeps working on stuff. He keeps, you know, innovating to defeat the challenge at hand. You know, I mean, he's the pinnacle Avenger. He might not be able to come up with the solutions beforehand, but after every single fight, he betters his armor. He comes up with something else, you know. And looking back on it, you know, watching Infinity War and Endgame back to back, as soon as you hear that conversation between Tony and Pepper in the park, you instantly know Tony's going to be the one to kill himself for the rest of the team. You know, that's just who he is, just a workhorse. And I didn't see it coming, but it makes sense, you know?
It's interesting. I feel like we talked last week about how Tony getting, you know, stabbed by Thanos had kind of prepared us emotionally for this one. I feel like I had a little less emotional response to his actual death than I did Infinity War almost death. Because that one, I was like, I don't know. I just felt like, okay, I've been here. This feels like deja vu. Burning rubble, Thanos, Iron Man. You know, I almost said goodbye to him last time. I don't know. It was good. I mean, it was still impactful. It was just, it was interesting to me how close those scenes were, kind of an emotional tone. And it was interesting, but also a bit obvious the way they flip-flopped the Spider-Man, Iron Man scene there at the end. I mean, you had to do it that way. It just made too much sense.
But I was nervous after hearing what'd you think of the I Am Iron Man thing? Did that stick the landing for you?
I thought that Robert Downey Jr. made a really interesting choice in how he paced how he said it. I would have liked him to say it just a little more quickly. You know, when Thanos said, "I am inevitable," I would have liked him to look at him and go, "I am Iron Man." But I think that might have sounded a little too silly and sing-songy. Like, I kind of liked the idea that his body was overloading with cosmic energy and it was a little hard for him to spit it out. You know, like, that made sense to me.
Right. After I heard that, I'm like, oh no, I hope they don't make him say, "I don't feel so good," or something like that. As soon as Spider-Man pops up on scene, I figured he'd go ahead and crack like a joke about it before realizing how devastating the situation is. But I mean, you look at that. I mean, it's hard to deny that Tom Holland is one hell of an actor. You know, I mean, that kid can just kill it.
Just as a side note, I feel like from something I saw you tweet that we probably are the same on this. I think the most emotionally wrecked I was is when Morgan told Happy she wanted hamburgers.
Oh, man. So I lost it at 2 points in the movie. So the first point that I actually got goosebumps so much was the whole teleportation scene, the slingering scene. Well, when Sam goes on your left, I'm like, all right, that's dope. Then we finally see him fly through the circle, then all of the slingering openings. That got me somewhat. It at least started the thing, the waterworks. And then even through the death scene and even through the funeral, I was doing all right. And then the cheeseburger thing from Morgan. I think it was mostly Jon Favreau's reaction to it, because Favreau started crying, and I'm like, oh, crap. It just felt very real, you know, because, I mean, Jon Favreau is probably the outside of Kevin Feige, you know, he's got to be one of the other crew members most invested in this. So, yeah, that's the one that made me ugly cry.
But to me, that was the perfect example of how this movie is intelligible for new people, but not as resonant as it is. Because if you're somebody new, it was just a sweet scene about Happy saying, I'm going to take care of you, right?
Mm-hmm.
But for those of us that remember Iron Man, like, we know that, like, when Tony came out of the cave, that's what he wanted. He wanted his burgers. And him, like, slouched down in front of the podium, munching away at him.
At the burgers, like, yeah.
It just, like, it had this resonance that called back to something that people who have invested so much into these movies got a payoff that you wouldn't have gotten if you hadn't. And to me, that's the thing that they did really smartly just throughout all this stuff. Captain America, did you feel like, first of all, did you have any guess that you were going to see him as an old man? And did you find that to be a good way to end it out?
I totally think, you know, there had been, who was that? Maybe Charles Murphy. Or who posted, someone in our circle kind of posted something about Falcon and Winter Soldier being a Captain America series, but they just can't announce it yet. Obviously, that now has much more clout. You know, reading Thursday night, reading, you know, Twitter and all the reactions and stuff, there was a pretty big contingent about fans that absolutely hated the Cap stuff. It just, I mean, it raises a lot of questions. Maybe not in terms of Cap's actual characteristics and such, but more as the whole time travel thing. Because technically, Cap went back in time and married Peggy while Cap was also on ice. At least the Cap Peggy knew, you know, which kind of seems questionable for what Cap to do. I didn't mind it, you know, to answer your question. I was surprised we did see old man Cap. It just raises a whole bunch of questions in terms of the time travel stuff. You know, like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I was a little surprised that he was there. I in the theater, what I thought was going to happen is that there was going to be like a tree nearby, and it was just going to be like something carved into it, like, I had a dance date or something, like, you know, like something to like say that he had stayed back. I didn't expect to see him in person again. But I totally don't. So here's where I'm cool with the ending. People are like, well, what did Cap do? Give up being Captain America and just live as a normal guy? The real Cap would never do that, blah, blah, blah. But again, I see this as one of those pairings. I think Iron Man and Cap were meant to have mirror image stories. Tony Stark's life was about doing everything he wanted and being selfish and only living for himself. And he had to learn in life how to be altruistic and live for others. And so that's why he ends his story by dying, because he's finally learned how to make sacrifices for other people. And for me, Cap was the exact opposite story. Cap was someone who had lived his whole life sacrificing for others and had never learned how to live himself. And that there is something heroic about someone like Cap learning how to live a normal life and to learn to not have to be... Like, there's a hint of it in the scene with Black Widow where she says, somebody's got to do this. And he says, well, is it possible this doesn't need doing? and that, like, having a messiah complex maybe isn't the best thing in the world. Like, I don't know. To me, the way that Tony was a selfish person that had to learn how to give to others, and Cap was a altruistic person that had to learn how to take care of self, like, to me, that is a very meaningful crossing of their characters and shows how he learned from Tony and Tony learned from him. Instead of just Cap being the Boy Scout that everybody looks up to, that Cap actually had something to learn from Tony Stark. That was very long and rambly, but that's right. The way it makes sense to me.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I'll agree with that standpoint. It's just, yeah, like I said, the questions about time travel, and obviously this movie's going to provide us enough content over the next 3 months. But yeah, that makes sense how you put it, I guess.
Let's just pick up a couple other things. Like I said, we'll pick up next week as well. Go into Thanos in the beginning and the scene where Thanos gets beheaded. We all said we wanted a time jump. I was still somehow surprised by that time jump. Like, when the movie picked right back up, like, 20-some days later, I was like, oh, we're not doing a time jump. And then they did. I don't have a question here. The scene with Thanos and the beheading, I mean, did you find it abrupt and shocking, even with everything you knew about this movie?
No, absolutely. It was very shocking. I'm like, oh, well, that's something. You know, first of all, I was surprised they actually showed the decapitation in the movie and his head laying there on the ground.
Twice.
Twice. So yeah, I didn't mind it. Yeah, it was very, very, very surprising. And then the time jump was almost like double surprising. I'm like, well, I guess we're doing that. And then the time jump, I'm like, well, I guess we're doing that. Good Lord.
I guess just thinking through other surprises, I'm very impressed that we didn't know about Thor and his girth until the movie. I mean, my daughter was asking me, like, did he really gain that weight? And I was like, I don't think so, because that would have ruined it. Like, a paparazzi had seen him.
Right. And that's the thing. You look back at the trailer, I'm pretty sure every single shot in the trailer was digitally altered in some way. I mean, the vast majority of the Thor stuff. Even, you know, what was it, Super Bowl ad when Thor was kind of looking out over a ledge of something? It looked like a spaceship. He was looking at, like, the port of a spaceship or something. But that was altered to look like his hut. Or that was Thanos' hut.
Shot was him leaving Thanos' place, yeah.
Right, but it was completely different. It looked like he was on a spaceship or something. Obviously, that rocket and war machine thing on the shoulder, there's Giant Man in the back, and then Hulk. All the Captain Marvel stuff, Captain Marvel was never inside the spaceship, right? Going to Thanos' farm?
Right.
Captain Marvel's the one that saved Tony and Nebula. Like, that's one of the most surprising things. I'm like, well, that made sense at one point, but then I finally convinced myself that Tony was going to work his way out of it, you know, and fix the ship himself. But yeah, looking back at the trailers, there was so much stuff that was altered. And then Marvel Studios just dropped an all-new TV spot that totally spoiled the Rescue thing. And that's another thing, Rescue. We never really find out about that. She just shows up, you know?
Yeah, I just took it like she had experience from Iron Man 3, so she kind of knew how to use the suit.
Right. But they did lie about the first 15 minutes. It wasn't Cap's last stand, but it was the last battle. Oh, and then the shield was altered in that scene.
I think the other one, when Rocket enters Thor's cabin with the lobster traps.
Oh, yeah, Hulk was in the background. They took Hulk out. Yeah, they took Hulk out. There's so much out that sequence of them walking, they switched the team shots and stuff. I'm surprised they never showed us the face masks and stuff, or the helmets that actually came with the suits, obviously because they're blatant Wasp ripoffs.
Also the hole like there was the four of them in the Super Bowl ad. There was like the four of them walking out to something coming in the sky, and we're like, who fits in that hole? And it's Pepper's head.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's Pepper's head.
I was the other thing. I mean, we'll get we've got to wrap up at some point. Yeah. I'm shocked that Vision didn't come back.
Right. And Elizabeth Olsen said on the red carpet that the series takes place in the 50s, which raises another question. How? You know, because Wanda wasn't Scarlet Witch until, what, 2014?
Right? Yeah, I took those comments to maybe just mean like a 50s aesthetic.
Do you think?
Yeah, to me... My guess is they're doing the Tom King Vision run in some way, shape, or form, and that they're using that suburban, like that, like
cover. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. They're basically using the imagery from King's run, which apologies to the artist, I don't know off the top of my head, but they're Dave using. Walter. Okay, I think they're using that art, which has a little bit of a Leave It to Beaver kind of like 50s sitcom feel. My guess is that art is inspiring their concept art. And so what she saw, she processed as the 50s, but right, in reality right, okay. is going to just be that suburban kind of thing, which would make me real happy.
If that series is about what, like if it's Leave It to Beaver plus Frankenstein, that I'm totally in. I'll call it WandaVision all the live long day, you know, but if that series is about a broken down Wanda trying to resurrect Vision using like black magic and things of that nature, I'm sold. I'll call it whatever the hell you want me to call it.
Yeah, that'd be great. All right, last thing and then we'll wrap up. I was so happy to see Jarvis.
Yes, like talk about first crossover, right?
Oh, and it's the kind of thing that even if you're an MCU movie fan, would have been nonsense to you, or you're like, oh, okay, there's finally that Jarvis guy. It was like it was a pat on the head for us TV people, all of us people that have slugged through all this Marvel TV. It was like I got to throw you guys a freaking bone for what you've watched. You know, that's totally how I felt about it.
Right, and that's conveniently enough, in the last movie, they give us the taste of... I think that's what most TV fans just wanted, right? It makes sense, right? Just to include Jarvis in there. And, I mean, it makes... I mean, Agent Carter was a Marvel Studios production, right? Instead of Marvel TV. So, yeah, I was surprised Coulson didn't make an appearance somehow. But then again, maybe that's the type of deal. We'll have to, you know, go frame by frame through that final battle. For all we know, the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents were all fighting somewhere. But don't get your hopes up. But yeah, Jarvis, man. Holy cow, I never saw that coming. Never would have guessed it. I mean, I guess, you know, I would have assumed Peggy Carter. But Jarvis? Man, that was dope.
I was also bummed. I was really hoping Annette Bening was going to be somewhere in that New Jersey bit, too.
They, someone was saying in that final, some of those spaceships were Skrull or Kree spaceships as well.
Oh.
There were so much stuff happening. Pegasus? I mean, how cool is it? Yeah, there's so much stuff.
I do want to know, where's that thing been sitting? Like, does she just, like, keep it, like, on a hillside somewhere? Or what with the crap?
I don't know, but that Spider-Man sequence, and like you said, that A-Force, that seemed to me that eventually, you know, this week, a bootleg gif of that is going to pop up on Twitter, and you know it's going to go viral. Right? It's like Disney's saying, let's see how many retweets we can get on this moment, and then we'll make a movie once it reaches, you know, the most retweets something on Twitter's ever gotten, right? At the very least, that sequence was incredibly badass. It was dope. Dope.
Yeah, it was totally cool. And, you know, it's a thing where, like, again, I watched it with my wife the first time and my daughter the second. That was their favorite moment. Like, I could hear them making the squealing noises when it was like, you could just tell it was all the women together and they were just like, you could just see why that representation stuff matters. Like, to them, that was really huge to see a female kind of team on the screen and all that kind of stuff. So.
Right.
All right. We're going to stop here, listeners. I have other things we can talk about, but like I said, this will have to extend. Otherwise, we'll give you a 4-hour podcast. It'll take me forever to edit, and that's already late in the day. So we'll keep talking next week, hopefully with Rhiannon. We'll see how that works out. And we can talk about other things. If you have questions that you want us to talk about, go ahead and hit us up on Twitter. I'm back on Twitter now. And go ahead and ask us there, or ask us on the pod post or whatever, and we'll be happy to talk about them. So that's all for now. If you want to, you know, you have all the places to find us: facebook.com/MarvelNewsDesk, watch.marvelnewsdesk.com for the YouTube, patreon.com/MarvelNewsDesk if you want to give us some money. And thanks to Alvin for the theme music, Tim Cox for the logo, and thank you guys for listening. We'll talk to you next week.